I know you must have told this story a million times, but for the millionth and one, how did this come about? How did you meet one another?
Ah, Tony will tell you that.
Well, Hunt and David and I met and started working together about 12, 13 years ago with Jim Osterberg, Iggy Pop, when we did the Lust for Life albums and tours. We always had a good time, you know. A little over 3 years ago, I ran into David in Los Angeles, and he told me about this guitar player that he had been working with. It was really great, and the three of us, Hunt and David and I, got together in Los Angeles to have a play and just knock around some music. And we thought, hey, let's go over and play with Reeves. We didn't think, hey, let's get a band together and go out and sell a lot of records and do the thing and do this and that and tour and, you know, and we just got together for a play. And it's an extended play.
And we've regretted every second of it ever since we started.
No.
No.
Were you ever concerned that you would have the supergroup problem? You know, critics saying, oh no, another supergroup on the way.
Nope, because we don't expect to change anybody's perceptions of what the band is.
There's, cappuccino.
Ah, va bene.
Would you like something?
Oh, no, thanks.
A mandolin for the lady. Mandolin for the little lady.
There's a song on here that talks about the nightmare stories that bands have. So I thought if you could relate sort of a nightmare story that you might have had with a band when you were a kid or growing up or tour experiences or such that might come to mind.
Nothing ever bad ever happened to me, ever. The funniest thing that happened, and it was a bit of a nightmare, was on the first show of the Diamond Dog Show. I had a contraption fixed into one of the skyscrapers that was an integral part of the set that put me out in front of the audience. It was like a hydraulic, it was the cherry picker bit, but is now known and loved through the Stones. This was 1974. And the cherry picker would place me out on a chair about 30 foot over the audience and about 7 or 8 rows out into the audience. And the first night we used it, it went wrong. And I finished the song, I think it was Space Oddity, and it didn't go back. And I was just left there out over the audience. And I did, I think, about 7 or 8 songs out there until they figured a way of getting the hydraulics to work to pull me back in again.
The audience probably had absolutely no clue that anything had gone wrong.
No, I think they just figured that I was just, you know, my usual wacky, zany self.
What about you, Tony? Have you had a nightmare story touring or playing in a band?
I was driving cross country with Ray Manzarek. I was playing guitar with Ray, we were in a Winnebago and in Arizona somewhere, and one of the tires came off the car at about 60, 70 miles an hour off the van, and we spent the rest of the night, everyone in the van, looking for the tire. I mean, I don't know.
My tires are coming off all the time.
Maybe you need a new mechanic. That could be the problem.
I like it. No, I have to specially fix so that at a certain speed they will eject.
Are you feeling jaded or anything by the business, or is it always sort of fresh and new?
Thoroughly exhausted. We got back from Harford last night about 2:30 in the morning, and I don't think I just didn't sleep until, I mean, I slept on the bus until about 2:30, and then when we got in, I just didn't go back to sleep again until about 5 this morning. I'm absolutely shattered.
It's an absolutely glamorous life, being on the road. Maybe 3 hours a day sleep and 5 hours traveling. And,
I mean, if you've never done it before, I think it could be fun to travel around like that. But I think once this is, I don't know, I've been toured maybe 15, 16 times. I've done these kinds of tours. The actual traveling procedure and the logistics of hotel moving is just a bore. You just end up living for the 2 hours that you're going to work on stage. There's only so many books that you can read on a bus before your eyes start going funny.
There's one song that I... Well, you went so far away, I can't... There's one song that I really relate to because I'm getting married, and I want to talk about
Uh-oh.
This.
You too, huh?
Don't make the mistake.
Do you believe in marriage?
Oh, very much. Well, I have to at the moment because I'm getting married next year. So at this moment, I'm very pro the idea. Yeah, I don't think there are any disadvantages whatsoever. I think it's a glorious union. What can I say?
Do you find that being on the road, though, can be taxing to a relationship, especially if you are married?
Yeah, we've both been married 130 times.
I don't find it taxing at all because I have an absolute and complete commitment to my relationship. I find absolutely no problem with it whatsoever.
Are there any secrets? You know, what do you think is you know, the cause of a good relationship? What's important to, you know, have that relationship?
Trying very hard not to find yourself in a position where you want to change the person that you're with, that you've got to love them for what they are, exactly what they are. And you have to love the differences between you, and you have to respect the space between you. I think that's terribly important. So that's a very obvious example, but it'll do.
See, there's another song on here that talks about a very disturbing topic. If you could talk about that, Shopping for Girls.
Yeah, I think ironically, I noticed that the new edition of Rolling Stone has just done a feature on the prostitution trade in Thailand, which really accounts for a vast amount of tourist income for them at the moment. I know Thailand pretty well myself as well, because I travel a lot when I'm not working, but as a tourist, and I've been over there several times, and Indonesia. And I think there's nothing more pathetic than seeing an 8-year-old. Oh, at least, yeah. It's pretty... It's just inhuman. 8-year-old children who are not only into prostitution, but they're also they're pretty much addicted to drugs by the time they're 10. And of course, these days, most of them have at least HIV positive. I mean, it's a very sad situation over there.
Do you think that music can really change the world? I mean, no.
No, it can just reflect certain attitudes and certain stances and political positions. So I think there can be strong elements of identification with music, but I've never thought that music could ever change anything. It's more of a mirror than anything else.
For instance, a kid who will pick up the new Tin Machine album, do you think that they're going to read the lyrics, or are they doing... Yeah.
Definitely. We know that from the fan mail that we get. A lot of it is sunk home, and it's maybe brought a new awareness to some kids. But it's not going to change any minds. I mean, we had a song on the first album, Under the God, which was about racism. That was in 1989, and at that point we had mail coming from both sides. We had kids who just said, yeah, you put into perspective what we feel is going on. And we had other kids that said, how can you possibly condone the idea of people of different colours living together and all that. So we probably lost a few people as well. It's not going to change anything, but maybe it will polarize people's opinions more.
When you were a kid, when you were a little boy, what attracted you to getting involved in rock and roll or in music? Or
I just wanted to play a saxophone in the Little Richard Band when I was 8. That was it, and that's what I knew I was going to do in life.
Why Little Richard? What was it about him?
He was the first artist that I really thought was just great. I thought his music was wonderful. And I just love the look of his band with all those saxophones in.
What about, was it everything, you know, that you had expected it to be? Did it live up to your fantasies of it?
I think you throw yourself so much wholeheartedly into it that it's kind of like asking, did life live up to your expectations eventually? I think my expectations changed continually. What I wanted out of rock and roll when I was 18 was very different to what I want out of it now. But, I think on the whole, I wouldn't have picked another career, I think. possibly I couldn't ever have had a more interesting, thoroughly bewildering time had I picked anything up.
She changes when she left us up to her.